It is 9 a.m. in the West Coast, and this is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is January 13, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to cover the latest news, and we are going to play our special Wednesday music, the Italian one that we love. And we wanted to start with the news of today. You know, this morning I woke up to realize that there were two U.S. boats that hold captive in Iran. You know, freaking out was the least that I can say what my reaction was. Now, usually we know that if anything happens in Iran, it's not a good news. And everybody was holding the breath to see how it's going to evolve. Because last time that it happened with English, I guess, same story, they got released after 2 weeks. And with American, I don't think that the Iranian could have hoped for this kind of solution. So let's listen to what we have for you now.
Iranian military forces have taken two U.S. Navy boats into custody after allegedly straying into Iranian claimed waters. 10 American sailors are being held on Iran's Farsi Island in the middle of the Persian Gulf. The two ships were apparently engaged in a training exercise moving between Kuwait and Bahrain when they were seized. Tehran has already told Washington that the crews will be returned promptly.
The idea was that two boats went in the confinement between, you know, the international territories and the Iranian. And if you look at the map, it was a very, very simple and easy mistake to do to cross over. I was impressed by the fact that the Iranian captured them, but I'm so happy to say that they got released today. And everybody were commenting about the fact that in the State of the Union that was played last night with President Obama did not mention it. But sometimes, you know, not talking about it, it helps resolve things. And in that occasion, it was actually working very well. People were freaking out today, why didn't mention it? And the idea to get into fear in the middle when life are in stake and say something wrong that can, you know, get the negotiation on their release in jeopardy would be reckless. And the president did well not to mention it, knowing the player very well. So he actually played right, got them released, touche. That was a good one. All right? So if anybody listened to State of the Union, we can say that there is some mixed message and mixed emotion about this. First of all, there are people saying, you know, from the Republican Party that say, oh my God, he lives in another world, you know, everything is bad, and I don't know if you know, you listen to that, but they weren't happy with the State of the Union. On the other side, you know, the president lives in a different world, yes, because he understands things from a different perspective. His perspective, and I'm telling it because, first of all, he's the president of the USA, which I respect and I always respect, because it's a title and that is awesome and humongous and to carry it for 7 years already, by all means, he must be a champion, right? Now think about his world. His perspective is he made it to the most incredible time in history. He is the leader of the free world, you know, because America is the leader. Of course, everything is in dance, and because the technology is here, our life changed. We are completely immersed in new data information, that we respond to that was not available many years ago. Okay, so to come and blame, you know, the situation upon him, by all means, let's start at 2001 when 9/11 happened. When 9/11 happened, it was like, you know, it was a rain and a sunny day. Nobody expected it. We were completely surprised. It was such audacity to attack America and on American soil that it was unforgivable, for that matter. And that's why, you know, we had all those years of war after that. And it's a shake-up of everybody. And the whole region is shook up, and the Middle East has changed, of course. Now, we come to learn that there are stories about State Department sending emails, and we can realize what the argument in the back was. And by all means, I'm as an American Israeli, cannot say that I'm happy with what I heard and what the important things of the matter were dealing with. I'm sorry, I'm just completely overwhelmed with that information, that I'm still really saddened by the fact that Hillary Clinton suggested that they'll create some kind of nonviolent riot when you bring, Arab Muslims into the stage to stage nonviolent, riot. You are trying to uproar the Holy Land, and that's a mistake. I don't think that before God. And remember what the pastor said to Bill Clinton himself, the president said, "If you forget Israel, God will never forgive you." And look what Hillary tried to get people to riot in the street of Israel. Like, we don't have enough bloodshed in the Holy Land. It's like, how dare you? When you want to be the president, you think American will choose something like that? You think American, American people are good, honest to God people. They have a heart of a lion. They know. They have courage. They know good and right. They give the lead to the world not for nothing. They deserve the leadership because they are good. I've been among them so many years, and I respect them, and I completely, in awe of everything I learned. Of course, the Italian can teach you something about romance. We'll leave it for another day. Anyway, let's get our Italian music so maybe we can put some sizzle to this. All right?
Corsa senza guardare, e te vedo tutte le giorni, correre e ne va a faticare, a punire giù, è lontana se ne va.
And that was Pino Daniele with beautiful, when the rain, I can't even mention it because it's in Napolitano. Napoli is a southern city, which they have the best pizza ever, because if you go to Napoli, and Pizza Napolitana, that's where it comes from, I guess. And they have the best places to eat there. And, of course, they have the Grotta Azzurra. It's the beautiful things in the middle of the sea that out of the Capri. Oh, my God, you guys have to visit Italy sometimes when everything will calm down soon. So you guys tell me, what do you think is going to happen? The vision of the president about the State of the Union and about what's going to happen was that there is hope, because he believes that love will conquer everything. And people think that, you know, you have to talk about, you know, Turkey and about stuff, about money. But we all know how fragile is the economy everywhere. We know, and you know, everybody in Wall Street knows that the economy is so fragile that only with faith and hope that they're keeping it together. Because if it was like a few years back, people would sell everything. The Chinese even buying in their own future, they have belief. So they trust. You have to trust. And you have to keep on going. And love, you love the world, you know, will make a difference, absolutely. I don't understand why it's so amazing or incredible to believe. Okay, so let's listen to the next segment that I prepare for you.
Developing tonight, growing backlash against a Republican governor who says he has a plan to save the Constitution from a power-hungry federal government. Texas Governor Greg Abbott is calling for a convention of the states, a power entrusted to the people by the founding fathers for the purposes of amending the Constitution. It has never been used until now. Joining me now, Governor Abbott. Governor, great to see you. So what's the idea? You want to change the Constitution, but exactly how?
Well, first, Megan, importantly, this is not my plan. This was Madison's plan, Hamilton's plan, Ben Franklin's plan, the founders' plan. They knew and they articulated at the time of the original convention in 1787 that there would be a need for the American people to alter the Constitution as the country grew and evolved. And so they handed to us in Article 5 of the United States Constitution the pathway to do it. And they knew that it would be the people who would need to be able to do it, not government leaders in Washington, D.C. And that's precisely why they inserted Article 5 into the Constitution so that we can amend the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And basically what I'm calling for is not really changing the Constitution, but instead returning the Constitution to the original principles that were enshrined in the Constitution itself.
Well, like allowing a two-thirds majority of the states to override a U.S. Supreme Court decision? That was not in the spirit of the original.
Well, Megan, what was not in the Constitution and what would come as to great surprise to Madison and Hamilton is the way the Supreme Court justices amend the Constitution. Think about this. There are 27 amendments to the United States Constitution that were passed and ratified by the United States of America. However, that said, the Constitution is amended every single year by just five people who wear robes on the United States Supreme Court. And oftentimes it is contrary to the people of the United States. Even worse, you see the Supreme Court actually rewrite laws. Embarrassingly, what Chief Justice Roberts did in the Obamacare case, where the Supreme Court played the role of a super legislature.
But the founders didn't want to just cede everything to the majority. That is not the kind of republic they envision. And so, under your version, if we had the Supreme Court, let's say the Supreme Court decision Casey, where they relooked at Planned Parenthood and they said, "Yeah, we're going to uphold Roe versus Wade, but we're also going to uphold the right of lawmakers to curtail those rights. They can erode abortion rights at least on the edges." Let's say two-thirds of the states rose up and said, no erosion. We oppose that. Then it would just be the will of the majority as opposed to the Supreme Court telling us.
It was clear from the founders and what they imbued in every paragraph of the United States Constitution. They did not want to empower five unelected, unaccountable judges on the United States Supreme Court to be able to single-handedly amend the Constitution in an unaccountable way. But also, think about this. It's not just the court, which is just one of the items you brought up. Look at Congress. Who did the founders, who did the crafters of the Constitution empower to write the laws of the United States of America? In Article 1, it is the United States Congress. Mm-hmm. Despite that fact...
But what's happening is the executive branch is issuing a lot of laws through its agencies, and that's another thing you want to tackle. So I got to go, but can you tell me, what's the next step in your plan? What are you going to do?
One is the state of Texas needs to pass this. Two, I need to get other states to join in. Three, the people of the United States of America need to demand their legislature will support an Article 5 convention of states.
Governor, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here tonight.
Thank you.
All right. So we're back. It's Orly Bitty Davis with Impossible Truth. This is just something that, you know, occurs things to talk about, that the Article 5 of the United States Constitution give the authority of 2/3 of the House and the Senate to change the Constitution. Now, he's talking about something that it should be by the people, and they have the convention, something that is, it's really tricky. But the position that he was holding, which I think interesting, is that the Supreme Court, the judges in the Supreme Court, can amend the Constitution in, I guess, that in translating it or the way that they read it. So let's watch for this guy, what he's doing, what he's up to. Every time they talk about, you know, the real law and what it means and how it's interpreted by the people, I'm fascinated, because I guess that I've been spending so many time, so many years on the floors of, you know, so many legislation places. It seems like, and so many friends of mine are lawyers and judges, and I spent so much time listening to their arguments. I guess that since I was little, I was fascinated with law and order, and that's why, you know, I'm a little policeman myself. But the truth of the matter is, I like it when the people respect it. We have a situation in Israel that there are so many laws by the book that even that, you know, the body that's supposed to represent the law doesn't even respect the law. So it's a problem. I'm not talking bad behind my brother or sister back, but guys, you know, we need to be much firm about the law in the right sense of it, in the good sense of it, you know, like, it's the backbone of society. And that's why, you know, people have to understand that when they talk from American perspective, they can't even fathom the condition that people have elsewhere. You cannot understand, you know, the difficulty of the Chinese girls that they need to go to school, or, you know, and she needs to work. You can't understand, you know, the children in Africa that they have to walk miles to get to school in the morning. You cannot understand people that are in the street, you know, all over, the refugees all over the Europe right now and in the Middle East, because somebody decided to bombard them or create, rebels just started to fight the government. And I wonder whose idea was it in the first place. You know, thinking about it, America will have to own responsibility on that. Because if we have anything to do with that, as people, as free people, we have to really, really come clean before God and see what we can do to fix it. And fast. The idea that Assad is still in his place means that their rebel idea didn't work. And if we have Russia to hold the guards for his regime, it means that we need to come to the table and make a plan. It must happen. In order for all those Syrian children, mothers, grandfathers, people to be home, means that Europe doesn't have to absorb them. And it means that millions of people that are, you know, in Turkey, in Jordan, can go back home. And if we, the leader of the world, they'll make an accord and fast about how it's going to become. We need to really look ourselves in the mirror in the morning. And it ain't funny. I'm getting old, that's why. But I'm serious. It's not funny. You guys have to understand that Baghdad is still there. Get the rebel to disarm and ceasefire, and let's go back to business. It's not going to go away now. He plays cards right. That's how you do it. Sometimes you cannot just go and bomb people, decide to send rebels. Sometimes you cannot talk like you couldn't care less, like the Swedish foreign minister spoke about the Israelis. Like Israel, for some reason, people start blaming Israel for things. Of course, they're in the middle of war. Of course, when somebody calls jihad on you, you know, when they scream that they want to kill, your definition of attack as an enemy must be resolved by then. And when the foreign minister of Sweden states that in order for Israel to block terrorism, they kill the terrorists and it's they should think about it, I think that she's offline. And, of course, the Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs declared that they're cutting ties with Sweden. They're not welcoming Sweden, but by the constitution, Israeli constitution, she doesn't have the authority to do so. So anybody who can blurb, you know, stuff, it doesn't mean that they have the authority. So for Swedish, for the sake of our friends, you know, in Sweden, for sake of our friends, you know, of the world. For the sake of, you know, the guy that sang so great in the Eurovision this year. For the sake of the world, back off. Take it back. Hold, you know, let's come to conversation. We need to talk. But our Undersecretary of State, if you call it that way in English, I doesn't know the possibility to make such policy. She by definition. So I'm so sorry, Mrs. I'm not gonna mention her name, but she overreached. All right. So Sweden, take it back. Let's listen to some more Italian music, and we'll be back after that. That was more Pino Daniele. He's from Napoli, as we said. Now, what we want to talk about is what we have, you know, in stakes in the next few months. We need to come to the conclusion about Syria. We have to help the aid, you know, that they started already, but we need to answer mighty quickly. The United Nations and the Red Cross need to start making, you know, a collection to get some people to donate and countries. But something that was really interesting to realize just today, as far as I'm concerned, of course, people probably realized it a long time ago, but sometimes I'm thinking things after. You know, after the war in 2014, which we started live on this show, you know, we could have heard the sirens while I was making my first show. After the 2014 war in Gaza, the world decided to claim and help the Palestinian people. Now, what they did, they collect, they said that they're going to donate $5 billion to help to rebuild Gaza. But something that actually happens is when you donate to Gaza, you donate to Hamas, so you, the world, just donated $5 billion to a terrorist organization. I know it's not funny to realize that you actually, instead of controlling the mess, you actively involved in making it worse. So it's like shooting one boat. If your leadership of the free world would be, you know, like a boat, and you keep making holes for it because you give rebels money, you give rebels weapons, then you leave so much stack of weapons in Iraq. So all those terrorist organizations can take control over, and then you complain, oh, they're killing us. Of course, what do you think will happen? And it's not easy. That easy. Now, we need to come to terms with our mistakes and start negotiating. You want diplomacy? This is the time for diplomacy. This is the time to be your specialty, you know, the best ever in the world. You make it happen. This is the time for the magic show to start. As far as the policymakers, as far as the big players, because as I see it, America position really is right now is different than last year, because for some reason Russia, which I heard that they reorganizing their policy toward the common enemy that they have, and every time they have a common enemy, we know who is it. Now, I know that we and the Russian, the American and the Russian, decided to reignite the relationship. I remember that Secretary Hillary Clinton, so eloquently pushed the red button to restart the relationship with Russia. And I know that the Russian been meeting with Secretary of State John Kerry quite often, so there is no reason to think that our relationship are going to be better and going for better. However, it's a time to talk strategy, to say how you lift this massive, massive problem of the refugees by softening your decision and making everybody work nice. You guys know how to do it. It's specialty. You can charm your way around to settle, to make diplomacy work. And enough of those bombs. And you know, yesterday the Israeli got another submarine. And they called it, whatever they called it, and I'm saying they because it was an I that I called it, so I cannot say. But they were very happy, and I'm saying, wow, that's amazing. You can go up to what, how far you can go? I don't know. So, truly, sometimes the egomaniac of the centuries gets in the way of the planning, because whoever looks around can say that you might have other submarines in the area if you know the map. There too many around anyway to get another one. And I remember very clearly that, you know, that submarine, that one submarine was discussed by a minister of the Israeli government as a payoff, you know, for instead of paying Holocaust survivors money. And it's not a story, it's a fact that is public. I'm reading it from the news. I'm not making it up. So if the Holocaust survivor will know that it cost them a submarine, they will be really, really honored to know that. And they didn't even name that in memory of them. Didn't honor them at all. If you took their money, you better honor them. So, telling you, I'm not happy. Not happy in the way things are, and I'm not happy that I'm not running for office because I don't even have a party to run with, because I disengaged from the party, of the Likud party, since I know that it's all tricky players, you know, you have no club in. And since I'm, you know, outsider, I came out from state, I can play, I cannot make it be effective. They have too much stake there. Their leadership, what can I expect? So, no hard feelings, but if they don't decide to find me to anything, I cannot play, of course, so I'm gonna talk and maybe write my own book so we can analyze if at the end of the day my point of view was important. All right, so let's get some more music and we'll talk after. We'll tell you what Prince Harry is up to, because he every year has a plan, and God bless him, he is fantastic. He has a new plan for this year. All right, so let's listen to some music.
Questa luna ci illumina, la mia vita è la tua, la casa sulla luna, lontana la città.
All right, let's update on the Sweden issue. The ambassador of Sweden in Israel, Carl Magnus, he got invited tonight to the foreign ministry office and, you know, to talk about this foreign minister suggestion that Israel is killing the terrorists, which is something that is really ludicrous to even call defense as, you know, as a killing. But whatever it is, or her position, they call upon the ambassador to talk to him. Now, if it's the foreign secretary of Israel, which is the office is held by the prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, if he's meeting with him, probably this is going to go into the situation where Sweden is going to be hold responsible for whatever the foreign secretary said of Sweden. So I hope that it's not going to go that far. I hope that they're going to settle it, and I hope that they just chill with this talking. It's like, oh, you're indicating on our country. Wow. Clever lady. My goodness. All right. Let's see if we have more news for you today.
News poll out of the Hawkeye State shows that Senator Ted Cruz now is in first place. He has 27% of the vote. Donald Trump second, 23%. Senator Marco Rubio, who's been rising in the polls, now comes in third place with 15%. 2016, Republican presidential candidate Marco Rubio joins us with more. Senator, good to see you.
Good to see you, Sean. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Let's talk about the state of the race. All right, we've got two polls. The most recent polls have you third in Iowa, but second in New Hampshire. And then we've got two polls head-to-head against Hillary Clinton. This one has you up, believe it or not, the Fox News poll, 50-41% in a head-to-head matchup against Hillary. So tell us from your side the state of the race.
Yeah, well, I know Hillary doesn't want to run against me, but I can't wait to run against her. She is everything that we don't need in America. We can't afford another 4 years like the last seven. Just today, another article comes out about how allies of hers and staffers of hers were conspiring to try to start up Palestinian protests. This was reported just today. They found in the emails this plan to try to stir up protest among Palestinians to force Israel back to the negotiating table. Not to mention she lied to the family of the victims of Benghazi about what caused that attack. Not to mention the way she's handled classified and sensitive information on her emails. She is completely disqualified from being commander-in-chief. I really hope I'm our nominee because I can't wait to run against her.
What do you make of the instructions that she gave to one of her staffers to literally, you know, it was a back and forth where she said, turn it into non-paper with no identifying heading and send it non-secure. Now, she said she never sent or received classified emails. That became sent or received marked classified emails. And here she's telling somebody to identify it as not marked when in fact it was. Do you think laws are broken?
Well, this is... Well, that's what the FBI should be looking at. I'm going to let them make judgment on that and the Justice Department. I don't have any confidence this president's Justice Department will do anything about it. Here's what I can tell you. When I'm president of the United States, neither she nor any of the other people are going to be above the law, whether it's her or Eric Holder for what he did on Fast and Furious or any of these other folks. People are going to be held accountable if they broke the laws of this country. This president obviously is willing to protect his political cronies. But we're going to hold people accountable. Nobody is above the law, not even Hillary Clinton, even though she thinks she is. And, of course, she did all of this. By the way, it doesn't matter. She did all this because she wanted it for convenience. And so she didn't care that she exposed classified and sensitive information to espionage from the Chinese and the Russians. But there'll be a full accounting of all this when I'm president and we have a real Justice Department with a real attorney
general.
You're
saying if the FBI were to either recommend an indictment or if they sent information that indicates she did, in fact, break the law, and Loretta Lynch does not go forward with an indictment, that if you become president, you would follow up on any potential lawbreaking?
Yeah, what I can tell you, I can't order the Justice Department to do anything. Unlike this president, I'm not going to interfere in these agencies doing their job. I will say this, I am confident. In fact, I know for sure that I will have appointed, when I am president, an attorney general who will follow the law and apply it. Not one that conspires with me to undermine the Second Amendment, and not one that looks the other way when cronies of the current president are committing lawlessness, as has been, I believe, the case with regards to Hillary Clinton's emails.
Rudy Giuliani, former prosecutor himself, he's identified 16 specific laws that he believes should be investigated that possibly could have been violated. Are you convinced that Hillary Clinton broke the law?
Well, let's continue to gather the facts. Again, I think that we're going to let the FBI, that way people, I don't want people to accuse this of being some sort of political thing. This is about what's right and what's wrong, what's legal and what's illegal. I do have confidence in the FBI. I do not believe the FBI is politicized. I think they're going to conduct a full investigation, and they're going to provide that information to the Justice Department. And what I'm saying to you today, if laws were broken, I will have an attorney general when I am president that will hold people to account, whoever they are, for having violated our laws.
Because things are so tight, particularly in New Hampshire, where you are consistently now in second place, you will become a target. But you're also fighting back. More specifically with Governor Chris Christie, there's been a back and forth. You talked about him supporting Planned Parenthood and Sonia Sotomayor and gun control legislation, which he ran on in 2009. How intense is this going to get before New Hampshire?
Well, look, this is not personal. These are not personal attacks. He's been attacking me for over a month, but they're not personal attacks. I just believe that the Republican nominee and the next president of the United States has to be someone that is going to undo the damage Barack Obama has done. Our next president needs to be a strong defender of the Second Amendment, not someone who ran for office supporting gun control. That's what I will do. I will be a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. Our next president cannot be someone that supports Common Core. Chris supports Common Core. Our next president cannot be someone who thinks that Sonia Sotomayor would be a good Supreme Court justice. He supported her nomination. And our next president must be someone who will defund Planned Parenthood, not write checks to them like he did personally. These are all facts. It's not personal. It is important, however, that our next president be someone who will undo the damage Barack Obama has done to America. When I'm president, I will.
All right. In one poll, and this is the Marist poll, NBC poll, it has you beating Hillary Clinton by 5 points. Cruz beats her by 4 points. In the Fox News poll, you're winning by 9, and Cruz is winning by 7. But the bottom line is you do better than any other candidate in terms of a head-to-head matchup against Hillary. But you don't do as well in terms of the general election, primary election numbers. So why do you think there is that divide there?
Well, there's still a lot of choices in the field. Like I said, there's a lot of people still running, and they are going to be in the race for some time. And so, of course, that segments the voters a little bit. But what I'm confident of is now that we're after the new year, voters are starting to really tune into the race now. They're asking the important questions. They're learning more about the candidates beyond the superficial. And I believe that we're going to continue to grow in our support. So I am very confident about where we're going to be when the delegates are counted and we're down the stretch here. But we're going to let the process play out. We feel very confident about our plan, about our campaign, about our message. And here's the bottom line. When I'm president of the United States, all of these things Barack Obama has done to try to take from this country everything that makes it special, all of those things are gone. We are going to get this country back on the right track. We're returning to the Constitution. We're returning to the principles that we're going to re-embrace the principles that made America great. We're going to apply them to the challenges of this new economy and this new era, and we are going to make this country as special, if not more so, than it's ever been.
I don't think anybody imagined starting out how big immigration would be in this election cycle, but it seems to get bigger and bigger. We saw the New Year's Eve sex attacks that took place in Europe, for example, yet the president still insists we should take in Syrian refugees. Because it's changed, in other words, the debate has changed and shifted, and we've had so many issues at our own border and so many issues abroad with Syrian refugees. Have you altered your position? Because there's been a back and forth going with you and Ted Cruz about who was where in 2013, et cetera. I'm not interested in that debate. I'm interested in where you are now based on the fact that this has become front and center.
Yeah, well, number one, I do not support amnesty. And when I'm president, there will not be amnesty. Criminal aliens are going to be immediately deported. Sanctuary cities are going to lose their federal funding. Number two, we are going to enforce our immigration laws. I've already supported that repeatedly in the past. 700 miles of fencing and walls in key sectors, 20,000 new border agents, mandatory E-Verify. All of those things are going to happen when I'm president. That's not the debate that's changed. The issue has changed. You now have a radical jihadist group that is using our immigration system against us. So we have to treat this issue differently because the issue has changed. This is now about ISIS trying to get people into this country as refugees, as doctors, as students, as fiancés, through the visa waiver program. So it's very straightforward. When I am president, unless we know who you are 100% for sure, and we know why you're coming to America, we're not going to let you in. It's that simple. That's what we're going to do, in that sense, when I'm president.
You once told me that the comprehensive bill that you supported was a mistake, and you wouldn't do it again, and it wasn't really what you wanted. No, basically, with the president now having a Syrian refugee at the State of the Union, he's obviously sending a message. What message do you want to send back about where you are now on not only Syrian refugees, but all the people last summer that crossed the border?
Well, let's be clear. I've always been for an immigration system that keeps us safe. The problem is that we didn't have ISIS 2.5 or 3 years ago. ISIS is not just a terrorist group. It is a sophisticated group that has a real good understanding of our immigration system, and we know for a fact are trying to use it to get people into this country. So we have to change our approach because the issue has changed. And where I am is pretty straightforward. We are compassionate. Our hearts break at the story of what some of these refugees are going through. But our number one obligation is to keep America safe. When I am president of the United States, if we do not know 100% for sure who you are or 100% for sure why you're trying to come, we're not going to let you into the country. It's that straightforward. That's going to be the rule when I'm president.
Okay, take us beyond New Hampshire and walk us through your strategy for South Carolina, Nevada, Super Tuesday.
Well, we feel great about South Carolina. We were there a week ago on Saturday. We had 1,500 people turn out in Hilton Head. We were back again this weekend. We had events, 600-700 people at each of them. Of course, Trey Gowdy has now endorsed us. We've been working very closely with him in South Carolina. We feel great about our team. We feel great about Nevada. The Lieutenant Governor of Nevada, Mark Hutchison, is our chairman there. We've got a great team on the ground. And then we feel great about the states that come after that as well. Right now, of course, the bulk of our focus is on Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. But we're ready for the other states. I feel great about our campaign. I think this is really where the campaign, the rubber meets the proverbial road. And I think as people learn more about what I've done, who I am, and what I will do when I am president, our support's only going to grow, Sean.
It looks like it's now been winnowed down to three people, you, Cruz, and Donald Trump. It's getting interesting. Senator, thanks as always. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Sean.
Don't go away, everyone. You're listening to BBS Radio. This is Charles Giuliani from The People Speak. Stay tuned.
All right. My God, that was nice. Interfere with our show. So good. I like BBS Radio. Okay, that was Rubio. He is a number three right now contender for the nomination of the Republican Party. But pay attention, because this guy is really sharp. This guy is really smart. I've been listening to him, and more, first of all, his composure is flawless. His delivery is incredible. And he has something to sell America. And I'm telling you, after Cruz, you know, nomination might be in stake because of the legality of his birth. He was born in Canada. But I want to ask a question before we conclude. If you send a military family overseas to combat your war, American war, you say that they are good enough to die, but the children are not good enough to be a president, that's something that is not, it doesn't go well. Because Ted Cruz is American by birth. He was born on a military base, right? That military base is America. So any time that you come to an embassy in America, in overseas, it's American embassy is American soil. That should be included as far as the military goes too. So if there is any question, I would ask, if they're good enough to fight for you, they're good enough to, you know, by birth, it's supposed to be eligible too. All right? So this is it for us, folks. Let's talk on Sunday. God bless you all. I love you. Uli Benny Davis from here in Israel, from the Holy Land. God bless you all. Love you. Ciao, ciao.